Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is on fire.
Which direction we are going?
Direct me El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Have reached a tipping point.
Good evening, wrestling fans, ladies and gentlemen, and all the ships at sea. This is the tipping point. It's our week. Well, I am Stephen Platinum, and joining me, the venerable, the wise, the benevolent Larry Goodman. How are you this week, Larry?
Well, I'll take the venerable. I don't know about wise and benevolent, but I'll thank you anyway, Steve.
Oh, most of our listeners don't know what those words mean anyway. Larry, it was a big weekend, and Raw as well. Just a huge weekend in wrestling. I guess we'll just dive right into it. What shows did you attend?
I attended only one, which was the Ring of Honor in Duluth at the what is now known as the Infinite Energy Arena, although this was actually in the convention center, the adjoining convention center. They had hockey in the main building. This was in a ballroom area in the convention center, which was actually size-wise fairly similar to the place they'd been running over in Norcross. A little nicer seats and a little better acoustics, but basically the same size place. And they packed it out again, Steve. They had I'm gonna say 1,100. That's what I understand the setup was for the room. And,
oh wow!
And every seat was full. And I checked with one of the guys from the venue, and he said that setup was around 1,100. So,
wow, that's fantastic news.
Yeah.
And I mean, you didn't write a review of the show, but Alicia Stockton did. What was your overall impression of the show?
Okay, so, well, of course, it was athletically a very good show, as all of their shows here in Atlanta is, and just about any Ring of Honor show I've ever seen has been. I mean, these guys are so skilled.
Yes.
It just jumps out that you're seeing, you know, some of the best in the world, no doubt about it, from a skill level perspective. That said, it also is a little bit more like Cirque du Soleil in a ring than it is a traditional, what I would think of as, you know, of a wrestling show, in the sense of, like, nobody has any heat except B.J. Whitmer.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, a real heel. Like, he's the only one that really has heat. I mean, not that there's anything that it has to be that way. It's just really a notable difference that in every other match, you had people cheering for everybody and, you know, split crowds across the board, and nobody else that was really, like, getting any kind of real heat.
I had a comment today. I was talking to somebody in the morning, and sort of talking about Royal Rumble, which we'll definitely get into. I actually was there for the Royal Rumble match itself. I showed up there live, and you know, people were complaining about Triple H. Oh, why does Triple H have to win? And my answer was simple, because they don't have any other top heels. I was talking about, you know, are the Bellas heel or face? Is AJ Styles heel or face? Like, you know, like, talking about all this stuff, and I went, oh my God, I just realized something really horrible. And they got quiet, and they said, what? And I'm like, Vince Russo has gotten his way. Like, in wrestling, Vince Russo has won. Of course, stylistically, not necessarily, but this idea that, oh, if the crowd's going for both guys, great. As long as they're reacting and as long as they're, you know, that's great. And, you know, shades of gray, and we're not going to insult the fans' intelligence and all this kind of stuff. And I thought about that and just went, wow, I guess this is what wrestling looks like when you sort of take out the heat elements out of it. I don't know, but I mean, obviously they packed it out. I'm sure the crowd was enthusiastic and into everything, right?
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a negative, just noting it as a change in what wrestling has become. As to the crowd, definitely a positive for Ring of Honor is the broader appeal that their product clearly has than it did going back, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years ago. A more mixed racial makeup to the crowd, age makeup to the crowd, men and women, even some families, not just a bunch of dudes, you know, nerdy dudes coming out to see a wrestling show. So definitely they've come a long way in that respect of having a broader appeal. So I guess the TV is having an impact in that respect.
You know, maybe it's the kind of thing where even, you know, if the ratings aren't the highest, maybe they get a bigger return on investment, maybe a higher percentage of people who watch Ring of Honor. I think being exposed to Ring of Honor would definitely surprise a lot of people who wouldn't even know who they were, but you'd watch and for, you know, it's hard hitting action and all that. But I would not call it adult themed content. Like, there's nothing there that would scare away a family from going, honestly. I mean, as racy, the raciest thing they have is Dalton, right? And that's really, I mean, that's almost played really so burlesque and theatrical that it's completely non-threatening. So, I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't go. That's pretty great.
And there was no, and, you know, Ring of Honor in the past has done some graphic violence type stuff, but this show didn't have any of that. There was no blood. There was nothing really that was that far out there that any family. I mean, if you're going to take a family to a wrestling show, this was as much of a family show as any other one. It's certainly no foul language or that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, if you think pro wrestling is family fair, then this would fit the bill for you. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, it feels like these are like kind of the salad days again for wrestling promotions in general, whether WWE, Ring of Honor, or the promotions in Georgia. It seems like a lot of people are doing pretty well right now. And certainly, you know, the guest that we're going to have on today, he's running a successful promotion. And I guess it's just great news. It's just great to hear because there's always all this negative stuff. But Ring of Honor obviously knocked it out of the park. It honestly shocks me that they drew 1,100. I'm stunned by that, and it's great news.
Yeah, and you're talking about what potentially could have been a tough weather night here. It didn't turn out that way, except it was brutally cold for Atlanta. But, you know, there was some question in the days leading into whether the show would take place because of the weather, and that certainly didn't dissuade anybody from coming out, not one bit, unlike Cornelia, which we'll probably touch on that later as well. Just a few notes on the particulars on the show. Corey Hollis, had another fine showing with Dalton Castle. That was a very entertaining opening match. The odd thing to me was Corey Hollis being managed by Trina Michaels. It just seemed like an odd fit to me. I just didn't get it. I guess if that's trying to make Corey heel, I don't know. But it just was weird to see Trina Michaels out with him. But match itself was fine. The AJ Styles segment was absolutely a home run.
Yes.
I myself would have liked to seen the all of the title matches instead of seeing it all lumped together into a main event where you had War Machines, Lethal, and Strong in a four-man against Bullet Club with all the titles on the line, which, of course, everybody knows no titles are going to change hands here. It's kind of not even worth making it a title match. But the segment out there with Lethal and Strong and all that worked really well, as did the Styles returning to give the Styles Clash to P-Dog. People enjoyed that. People enjoyed that greatly, and that came
one
very,
more
very well.
For the road for old
yes.
Posey.
Yes.
You know, I think that's notable as well. It feels like Posey continues honor, but more than that, just looking at pictures and stuff, it feels like Posey's on the verge of getting something. It seems like Corey Hollis is on the verge of getting something. You know, you're getting to see a lot of Wildside alumni at, in WWE. The New Day had that huge thing with The Rock last night, and of course they did great. And, you know, AJ Styles, of course, wrestling Jericho and being the surprise in the Rumble. It's just a really great time. It's a cliche, but it really is a great time to be a wrestling fan in the state of Georgia. Lots of people are doing big things. Southern Fried's kind of got it together, and you know their next show looks to be a good one. And you know, PCW, forget it. I mean, and this is weird to even say, but like we're having turnaway crowds. And
I looked at the photos. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're having to figure out like how to get more seats in there and all this kind of stuff. It's great that the work of the guys is being rewarded. Did you talk to anybody?
No, I did not talk to any of the – I talked to Bill Behrens there, but I didn't talk to any of the Ring of Honor wrestlers there at this show. No, I did not do that. A couple other thoughts on the show. The All Night Express versus Moose Burger match. I thought that they did a good job of Cheeseburger getting offense for such a tiny guy, but the offense that he got – was not so it was kept within bounds so that it didn't look ridiculous against two much bigger guys.
Mm-hmm. So
it was entertaining and it was comical, but not to the point where it's like stupid. Moose, of course, always way, way over. But one thing I noticed about him, he works really light. For such a big, monstrous guy, he needs to lay him in there a little more. He's light on his feet and all that, but I'd like to see him lay it in there a little more with his clotheslines and things than the way he does.
Especially at Ring of Honor, if you're hanging with the Ring of Honor, you're gonna get Japan stuff and you're gonna get the rest of it. And when you look at like a team like War Machine, who I would say is sort of the tag team equivalent of Moose at Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
I mean, no, those guys kick your ass. And it's a way for Moose to kind of strangely distinguish himself, because he's got such a size advantage on the guys that, you know, people want to see him kick ass. Though I'll say this, one thing that I've always been impressed by Moose is he finds ways to work gimmick and to separate himself and to make himself
Absolutely.
Sort of a unique thing. And I mean, that's going to carry him miles. But like you said, you know, if he takes that suggestion about tightening his ring work a little bit, you know, sky's the limit for that guy. I mean, God knows they love a big dude in WWE. So
Cedric and Mark Briscoe, I really enjoyed that match because it had they worked very well together. It had a nice build to it, and Alexander going over clean. I thought that was very well done, that match. The six-man with ACH, Seidel, and Shelley against Elgin, Fish, and O'Reilly was, again, a just really, really good match. All kinds of athletic stuff and entertaining spots and ideas that they had there. Again, very, very well done. No complaints. The women's match was like a popcorn match. They were coming out of intermission. There was nothing wrong with the match, but people were just sort of settling in, and it didn't get much response. That's just the way it was. The six-man scramble was Adam Page, Frankie Kazarian, Will Ferrara, Silas Young, Caprice Coleman, and Jay Briscoe. The thing that jumped out at me was that Adam Page and Jay Briscoe were just a level above the other guys in the match. Not that anybody did poorly by any stretch. But Paige, oh my God, is that guy a comer? Wow.
You know, it's interesting to me that the Briscoes, put over Cedric Alexander, were involved in that scramble match. I wonder if the Briscoes see their role at this stage of Ring of Honor of, we need to make guys. You know, Ring of Honor is going through a similar, I don't know if you want to call it a problem, I guess it is, where clearly if you've got the goods in Ring of Honor, you're going to get snatched up. You're going to get snatched up by TNA, snatched up by WWE, NXT. So the Briscoes seem like they're working really hard to kind of bring guys up from that mid-card level to possible main event level. And
yeah.
I think the Briscoes just strike me as the kind of guys that you want on your roster. You know, Twitter faux pas aside, I think they're the kind of guys, they're just like wrestlers. And clearly they're sort of an integral part. They've got that great thing where they've got the credibility. They've been champion at Ring of Honor. They've been the tag team for God knows how long. And now they're helping to bring guys along using that credibility that they have to give them the rub. It's exactly what you're supposed to do. And I mean, Ring of Honor, I think it's pretty much undeniable that they are the most go team promotion going outside of perhaps NXT right now.
Mm-hmm. Just to finish up here, Adam Cole and Stevie Richards, nothing wrong with the match, not worked at the sort of breakneck pace of a lot of the other matches. A lot of payback is hell kind of stuff with Richards giving back mirror image of whatever Cole did to him. Good match, but the crowd wasn't like super into it for whatever reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then the main event with the Bullet Club was tremendously well done across the board. I really like the post match where the Bullet Club did their huddle up and they
did the curtain call.
Yeah, they did the curtain call and they mm-hmm. teased whether or not Styles was going to be in it or not when Styles came out. And then of course, you know, they let bygones be bygones, and he was there with the Bullet Club members huddling up. And then at the end, Luke Gallows says, well, you've just seen a personal, you know, very touching personal moment in our lives. And now it's time to go sell some merch. Head for the tables, boys. And that was how the show ended. So.
Oh.
But yeah, they did not announce a return date, but I'm sure they'll be back.
I was just going to ask about that. I noticed Ring of Honor has, because there was a time there not all that long ago where they were kind of having to cancel shows, for whatever excuses, but it was clear that, you know, tickets weren't moving. But that was a while ago. And now, I mean, I just noticed it's just like date after date added. Gary Jester told me a couple of years ago that the plan was they're going to have these markets and then they were going to look at the ratings they got in markets and then sort of book shows accordingly. And I think in the short term, because that's when Cornette was still there, in the short term, that didn't really work. But it seems like as a long-term plan, it's definitely working. And getting to return to places where they've done well periodically to sort of garner those audiences again. And instead of diminishing returns, which kind of looked like it was starting to happen in the other venue they were doing, now they're getting – well, we're getting all the people that we got before and some other people besides, which is, of course, absolutely what you want and the ideal.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They've got a following here in Atlanta, and they've proven it with this string of three shows. At this point, we're going to be joined by our special guest for tonight, a fixture on the Alabama wrestling scene, the promoter, owner of Global Championship Wrestling over in the Birmingham area. I'd like to welcome to Tipping Point Mad Dog Dan Sawyer. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, sir. How are you guys? It's raining
doing
over
well.
Here. Kind of crazy.
Well,
I got stuck in the car out on 280. I don't know if you guys have ever been over that way, but traffic is
yes.
Really rough at this time. But, if you guys don't mind me talking and traveling, I don't mind talking.
No, fine with us. Fine with us. So I know you've got a show coming up in Pell City this Saturday night, correct?
Yes, sir. January 30th, we're at the Pedal City Civic Center. I got a big four-way match with Real Deal AJ Steele, Mudbone, Clyde Braddock, and the Bosnian War Child Spiral, which if you haven't heard of him on the independent scene, you just haven't been listening. You know, very, very well known in Puerto Rico after a couple of shows down there, as well as 01 over for Nakamura in Japan. So I'm sure your listeners know a little bit about Japan.
Yes, Dan. This is Steve. I don't know. I don't think we've ever met face to face. I'm gonna fire this question out. Okay, GCW has just been kicking ass, right? Like big houses. Like whenever I talk to Ox, I mean Ox is just like, man, they're getting huge crowds up there. I mean, you can look at the pictures and see that you guys are doing awfully well, and it seems like you're just clicking. How long have you guys been in this kind of groove, do you feel?
We've been, like, in this town in 12 years, but the news has gotten so good throughout the Southeast that we're taking over some shows in Cooksville, Tennessee in March, and then Dalton, Georgia, coming up March 12th. And we are doing well. It's kicking, but it's because the boys are working hard and we're trying to produce the best product we possibly can. It's a little bit of old school and a little bit of new school. It's not just one thing. We've got the flying of Ring of Honor with several guys, and then you got the ground to pound guys, and you got your Shakespeare. You know, a little bit of comedy stuff, but you can't have too much of that. You know, too much of one thing is kind of ridiculous. So, you know, it's a variety, of wrestling, and I tip the hat. I mean, the booking, you know, it's not an easy job to be a booker. there is a term called the pencil for the booker. And the reason that is because you can't put nothing in ink anymore because you never know what's going to happen between injuries and all kinds of different things can happen. You know, guys have accidents and all kinds of different things go on in their life. And, you know, they find other things to do with their time sometimes. But, you know, I try to take good care of the guys and make sure that, you know, we do what's best for, you know, GCW and what's best for, like, the fans. You know, it's sometimes after the Rumble, I saw, you know, for WWE, I saw all these people complaining about this person got thrown out too fast.
Yeah.
That's your opinion, but come on, guys. Let us do our job and, you know, let us entertain you and stop, you know, everybody's got an opinion on stuff, and I'm very happy the fans have an opinion. But stop saying the biggest company that's going out there doesn't know what they're doing. So, did I lose you? I thought I cut out there for a second.
No,
Dan, you just sprung a piece of news on us there about you're going to be Global's going to be coming to Dalton, Georgia.
Yeah, we're March the 12th, I think, is the date. Yep. But there's a promotion there called DCW that used to run. And I think it's Dalton Championship Wrestling. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I think that's what that stands for. But we're supposed to be over there March 12th. I've been in negotiations with there's several little guys that, you know, I'm not saying they're little in stature, but, you know, the promotion, they want to kind of up the ante. I mean, it's a good town. I've been there once, and I just went to check it out, and next thing I know, I'm having to work with Swinger, Johnny Swinger, and I don't know, it's one of those examples of what I talked about earlier. Somebody didn't show up, and the backer of the show is like, well, do you have your gear? And, you know, that's like asking Superman if he's got his cape or Batman if he brought his utility belt. Of course, you know. Even when I was out for like 3 months, everywhere, you know, if I would go visit a show, I would actually always carry my gear. That's the way you were trained back in the day, and you kind of went and did your job. So the guy that was the backer had never seen me work, and I had a great mattress winger. It was fun. Always is to work with him. But, yeah, March 12th is the date that we're coming there to, I think it's the Dalton Recreation Center. I don't have my book right here in front of me because I'm driving, but I'm pretty sure I'll let you know if you get to come out Saturday to the show. I'll let you know which one, which building it is over that way.
Great.
That way I don't say the wrong information.
Now,
Dan, no.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Dan, you know, you've got things going on, and now you're going to run a show in Dalton. What's the thing that you're kind of most excited about right now? It could be something that you're booking or that you're running a different town. Like, what gets you really excited about GCW right now?
You know, having a YouTube page is cool and everything. We're on locally here in Alabama. Speaking of, like, you guys are here, but, you know, that is great. But when you can get the YouTube thing going, you can reach, you know, universal. You know, you get some viewers and stuff, and we find out we got people watching us across the globe. And when you got Japanese guys that saw Spiral over at 01 saying, oh, we love this, you know, Global needs to come to Japan. I'm like, you know, that's a little tighter. The territories actually still exist over there. So, you know, I don't want Inoki or Nakamura or one of these guys in Kenoshu to put a dead horse in my bed or something. So, you know, I respect territories. And that's what I spoke with these guys about before we went to Dalton and even watched their show. I was like, is this stepping on someone's territory? Because I still respect that. I've been in it 26 years, and I those things still exist in my mind. But people step all over each other all the time, even where the athletic commission is involved. We're going over to Mississippi to work for Ego, like February 20th. And, you know, they have a commission there, and things are kind of it's kind of the good old boy network in Mississippi. They may show up or they may not. So it's just all according to who you're working for. And it's politics, man, you know, even on the independent level. But you just try to take care of your guys and make sure that they're in shape and have good gear and try to work with each other. And attitude is everything in this business. Attitude is everything. If you don't believe me, ask the Young Bucks. You guys were talking Ring of Honor before we went on. They're not signed right now because they didn't shake Booker T's friggin' hand. So anybody who comes through my school knows that you come in to a building, and it doesn't matter who's sitting there. It could be somebody's wife, not somebody's wife. We protect the business, but you shake everybody's hand. You know, I'm the guy that's known for making Shawn Michaels shake hands, which I think he put in his book one time. He thought it was stupid to have to shake everybody's hand. But I was taught by Sylvester Ritter, Junkyard Dog, it doesn't matter how big or small you think you are, you still introduce yourself with your first name and, you know, go with it and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, wrestling is I say it all the time, wrestling is a social business. And, you know, those protocols were put in place for a reason. And it's so, I mean, I'll see guys in the locker room once in a while who kind of get into this. I'm going to put my earbuds in and I'm going to tune out and listen to music. Well, I mean, it's one thing if you're getting ready for a match. It's another thing if you're isolating yourself from this group of people who are supposed to trust you. And the handshake is the first thing of garnering and generating trust and contact between two people. And, I remember reading that in Shawn Michaels' book. It's like, oh, you know, kayfabe handshake or the handshakes. I mean, that stuff. You know, who does that? But, again, I bet you it mattered when he was in the AW fucking A.
Mm-hmm.
It should matter a whole lot. And, you know, it's funny you bring up the Young Bucks because, I mean, the Midnight Rockers are very comparable in many ways. And, no, you got to shake hands. Obviously, you're a guy who's been doing this a long time. And I think it's absolutely imperative to have guys, traditions in wrestling. I mean, you know, Larry and I were talking about how it seems like this gray area, you know, no face, no heel stuff is actually beginning to take hold by and large. And I mean, maybe we can't fight the tide on everything, but I'll be damned if something as simple as make sure that you're freaking respectful to everybody in a locker room goes the way of the dinosaur. I think that's absolutely silly. And I commend you for being a guy who advocates for that.
You know, I was just talking earlier today with one of the biggest heels in the company, Mr. O'Hagan, and like he's got the U.S. belt for UIW over there in Georgia, and he's the middleweight champion and all that kind of stuff. He and I have we worked Extra Talent 2 years ago in April for WWE, and we've been invited back like 3 or 4 weeks ago. I got the email from John Cohn saying, hey, really like to have you guys come back in. And that's kind of a rib to me because I just turned 42 years of age. And, you know, one of the things when Triple H took over, he said, we're not going to be hiring anybody over 35. You know, and, you know, it's just like, is this a big rib? Because like several months ago, I had something go on with a blood clot, and I got 2 broke ribs and cartilage tore in my ribs in the ring, and I left by ambulance for the first time ever in my career. And I never thought I was going to be able to wrestle again. And then you get this call. I mean, I have clearance from my doc and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, it's just kind of surreal and ironic almost that, you know, you never think you're going to get that call. And like Larry will tell you, he used to rip on me all the time with Russell Birmingham. He said I look more like what was the big guy, Jerry Blackwell. He said he looks more like Jerry Blackwell than Buzz Sawyer said that. And you know, and I used to when I was 410 pounds. So you know, I'm a nice 260 still right now. But it's been a huge change in diet and all that kind of stuff. But you never know what's going to happen, and you got to give your all, and you got to shake hands. And it could have been shaking Michael Hayes' hand and whatever at the last show or something like that. You never know who you're making an impression on. I mean, Joey Mercury Matthews, he was friends with O'Hagan, and he knew him from being friends with Punk back from the OVW days, and he invited us to sit at the table with him and Jamie Noble, and you never know. I mean, you just got to always – you never know who's watching, guys. And if you learn anything else from this interview tonight, you treat everybody – you're going to see the same people going up the ladder as you see coming back down the ladder. So you better be nice. You never know who's going to be your boss in this business. And that was something Sensational Sherry Martel used to manage me. She told me that, but Vern Gagne told her that many, many years ago. You never know who is going to be booking – or promoting a show down the road. So you always be nice. You know, it's almost like Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, you know, always be nice. Well, when do we not be nice? I'll let you know. But it's just kind of, you know, it's fun. You know, it's a great business to be in, but the respect is still there, and you better respect other people to get respect yourself. And, you know, I just push that at my show. There's no drama. No BS. If there's beef with you and another guy in the ring, we're going to squash that stuff. But you better be professional and drop your personal problems at the door every time, because that's when you start getting into some real BS in the locker room when they bring in. That's why it's rough for husbands and wives to work for companies, because, you know, they'll be fighting and different things, and they bring it in, and it's not cool. Because then everybody feels weird.
Dan, you mentioned you referenced the physical problems you'd gone through recently, and I'm so glad that you're over those. That had to be pretty scary with the blood clots and all, eh?
Yeah, I mean, 08 I had back surgery and had like 4 disc fix, and I had got a blood clot like 3 months after surgery, and I took the heparin shots and all that jazz, which are blood thinners, and took the Coumadin warfarin stuff, and then I had not had any problems in forever. Like, you know, when that happened in August, you know, it's really like a friggin' movie. Like you're flat on the mat and you're looking up, you feel like you're in an old fashioned well full of water, but you got all these people standing around you, and it's kind of like you don't know even what's going on. You know, you got these people yelling at me, and you know, come on, you know, and then you're surrounded by paramedics, and I remember being set up, and Ox and his crew, LJ, they were taking the bottom rope off where they could roll me out onto the stretcher. That was like one of the weirdest things, you know, when they were asking me what I remembered. And I was like, I remember hearing the bell, and you guys put me on a stretcher. So, I mean, now that I'm a dad with a child that's 17 months old, you know, my wife says, you know, I never want to have that kind of call at 11:30 midnight saying you're going to the hospital again. So please don't put us through this. And we know you love it. You should just do promoting and all that kind of stuff. But, man, once you get bit by the bug, there is no rush. Like, you know, I played high school football, and then I played a little bit in college at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, as a long snapper because I'm short. But, you know, I've jumped out of an airplane, did some skydiving once, and I've done bungee jumping. There is no rush like coming through that curtain or the door, whatever the case may be, at an armory or whatever, like there is from a crowd, whether you're heel or face, you know. And I'm not one to, like, talk a lot of insider terms, but, you know, everybody knows what that is now. And there is nothing like feeling that crowd, whether they love you, hate you, whatever. And, you know, you guys talked about the heel face going away. I don't know. Down in the South, or at least I can say in Alabama, you got to have a pretty clear-cut heel to
yes.
get a match working, you know. The days of guys like Brad Armstrong working baby face versus another baby face on WCW Saturday morning, the fans, I don't think, appreciate it as a sign. The Ring of Honor fans do up north. I think they appreciate it, and they'll just pop for the moves, trying to be a Japanese crowd. But I still think you have to have who's who in the business. And it's, you know, it just makes it more fun and enjoyable to me. But, you know, I've been to Dragon Gate. I've seen the stuff at Ego. You know, I love those matches. You know, I think it's great and super entertaining. You know, Chikara. I mean, there's so many different things, so many different styles out there. Everybody's popping over Lucha Underground and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's just those things are great and amazing. But nothing beats just a good old-fashioned wrestling match, you know. I mean, that's what everyone really loves. And I've wrestled in 38 of the 50 states. And, you know, I feel like it's all about your psychology, how you want to work the position and the match and who you're working for. I know you have to change up your style a little bit and put it to work. It's not just Shakespeare and, you know, three bumps for a shine and all this kind of different kind of stuff. But I think that life is crazy, and you sometimes never going to know what you're going to get in the ring or with an audience. But you have to adapt your performance to what, you know, what the audience kind of wants, but you can also, you know, coerce them to your style, you know, and because you're only you. You shouldn't try to rip off stuff, and that bothers the heck out of me when people try to get on and, oh, I watched this promo from Jerry Lynn from ECW, and nobody will remember it. Yeah, right. You know, make something your own. That's what's going to get you hired, not ripping off something you saw Bill Dundee and Lawler do in 86 at the Pyramid, you know, or whatever. You got to make stuff your own. I think that's very important. And if you're putting on a farce character that has nothing to do with your life, I think the fans, even to the fans that are not smart to everything, they want to be lost in the disbelief, you know, that this is going on, this is the real, this is whatever. And I popped my friends, a bunch of us went and watched the new Star Wars, and we sat there and marked out for 2 hours, you know, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'm sure there's somebody who hasn't seen some of the stuff in Star Wars, so we're not going to go into that. But you have to allow yourself to have fun. If you bring somebody to wrestling who's never seen it, then they're like, you know, whatever, this is show business, this is this. And, you know, I still think that there's people who think what we do is easier until they try to do it. I get asked all the time, like at church and different events and stuff, people go, oh, man, that's a trampoline. No, just go up there and touch it. Just go up there and slap that wood and that little bit of cushion and that metal and tell me if you think that's a trampoline. Well, it's got a spring in the metal. Just look up underneath. Now, I know there are some rings still existent that do have a spring underneath, but I'm quick to show them, look, there's no spring under here. And they just think it's more show than what it really is. And when I was growing up, everybody wanted to be professional wrestlers. Now everybody wants to be, yeah, I'm an MMA fighter. You know, and that popped me because my family, I mean, that's kind of how I got into wrestling, is because I knew how to break fall and do some stuff, because where all the other kids were taking Taekwondo, I was fat, and I had to go take Judo and Jiu-Jitsu and get my butt kicked on a regular basis, or, you know, I'll just say ass because I'm sure it's okay. But, you know, it made me a better wrestler now because, you know, I've only had a couple people ever try to take liberties with me in the ring, and what I mean by that is try to shoot on me or stretch me. You don't see a whole lot of that anymore, but, you know, sometimes you have to calm some guy down in the ring because he's nervous and he thinks he's got to get in 52 spots, and, you know, you just have that's why it's easier to be the heel, because back in the day, the heel led the match. I mean, I know you guys have heard that before, but sometimes you're working with some guy that's straight out of Podunk, Arkansas, that's wearing a mask and stuff, and he'll tell you he's been in the business 10 years, and then you say, well, how many matches you had? And you see him doing math going, about 36, you know. I'm like, oh, okay, great. This is going to be a masterpiece right here, you know. But I can always tell if someone can work by locking up with them. I promise you, it's crazy, and you're going to know how they're going to work by the way they lock up. And you see it all the time, people doing it. They'll send you these little compilation tapes trying to get hired or looked at, and don't even lock up right. And that just drives me bonkers, because I think if you're going to go to the trouble of putting up a compilation of your best work in the first 5 minutes, the guy doesn't even know how to lock up. It's I've lost interest. You know, I'm going to watch another DVD that might be slower. I had a guy actually send me a VHS tape the other day, and that just really...
Wow.
I said, brother, is this for retro purposes? He goes, I knew it would stick out instead of an email. And I was like, you know what? And the damn thing was good. that's what's funny about it. The damn thing was good. And I was like, okay, this guy's ribbing me or whatever. He goes, no, I just send them all on VHS. I was like, dude, I had to, like, go to my parents and pull the VCR out. Because I don't have one. I got a damn Blu-ray player. And, you know, I had to go down, and my folks had one in my old room at the house I grew up in. And they're like, oh, you just take that with you. And I'm watching that thing, and I'm like, God almighty, this guy's good. And he did it in format, like, to send it to WWE. And, you know, he sold and got over and then cut a promo, and I was just like, this is the most classiest thing that I've seen in a long time, because usually it's just a bunch of spots of them getting over. They don't show them selling for nothing. I'm like, oh, guys, you know, it's great that you can do all those moves, but can you take some moves? Because you make it to the big show in up north, you're going to be selling and bumping, because that's where it's at. In my opinion, that is. You know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I've seen a couple things, and like to pass on knowledge. That's kind of my thing now. I try to work with some guys before a show, and I never thought I would be the guy doing that kind of thing. I just thought I'd always be the guy just bumping and feeding, you know. But Regal put it best when we did the extra talent 2 years ago. He goes, you got to be a good utility man, you know, and you got to be able to work with anybody. And he says, if you can do that, you can get over in this business. And if you have a good look and a good attitude and you're prompt, he goes, you can get hired. He says, but, you know, Vince wants people to look tough. They want them to look genuine. They don't want any, you know, with the MMA being like it is and UFC and King of the Cage and all the different factions and all that kind of stuff, Bellator. People watch that stuff, and it has been a crossover. We know that because, look, why do they keep hiring Lesnar? You know, I mean, the last time we saw him work before they rehired him, this time he shit the bed with Goldberg, and now they're talking about bringing him back, and I'm like, that is unforgiving what they did that WrestleMania, and I can't remember what year that was, but that was garbage. So I can't believe that they would want, you know, I understand because Lesnar went off to make himself a big, huge name in the UFC, but I don't know why. I mean, Bill Goldberg's one of the nicest guys in the world, but, you know, he's older. And do people really remember who he is? You know, that's the thing. It's so strange in the big company. You talk to children that watch it. If they weren't on TV in the last month, they don't know who the hell they are.
Right. Yeah, I mean that was WrestleMania 20. So it was more. I mean, time flies. That was more than 10 years ago. And okay, so there's a whole generation that doesn't know who Goldberg is. And right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey Dan, before we let you go, anything else you want to plug before we let you go tonight?
I'll just. Please, if you're going to be out near Pell City, it's worth a drive from West Georgia. Please, Global Championship Wrestling this Saturday night, January 30th, Pell City, Alabama, Pell City Civic Center. And you can check out GCWPro.com. And on there, you can check out, our show that plays on YouTube. It'll link you up real fast. But, please come on out. You know, this is good professional wrestling, and, guys are working hard to put on the best show possible. And these guys that are in the main event, I'm telling you, Spiral, AJ Steele, Mudbone, and Clyde Braddock, they're the future of this business. And I had a lot of people know who AJ is from the Georgia area. But come check it out. It is for the GCW Heavyweight Championship. It's three months worth of a tournament that's building down to a fatal four-way. So please come check it out this Saturday night. And I appreciate you guys letting me come on your show. I'd love to do it sometime in the future. And you guys were real class act, and I appreciate what y'all doing for not just me and GCW, but for the whole wrestling world, because if it wasn't for guys like you putting our stuff over, not as many people would view it. So thank you for your everything that you guys do. I know it takes a lot of time and energy, but we appreciate you guys as being part of the
And we appreciate you, Dan. Thank you. We'll definitely have you on again in the future. Just a fantastic job you're doing, and people need to check that show out.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, have a good night.
What's Larry? I was trying to remember when Larry and I, take you behind the curtain of Tipping Point. Larry will often email, sort of like, here's the guests we're gonna have. We got to make sure to ask him about that. The haunted house. We're gonna ask him about the haunted house. Can you just talk a little bit about that? What was that exactly?
Oh yeah, so over in Birmingham, there is whether they're running the haunted house or not. There's this place called Sloss Furnace, which was an old blast furnace, and they have all these wonderful old buildings from when they were running the furnace, and they turn it into a haunted house for Halloween, and Dan runs is the creative director for all the ghouls and folks running around in the
haunted house. That's fantastic. I mean, when guys who have like helped out with PCW before, I always tell them, if you stick with this thing, you will learn more about just managing things in general. Like, regardless of the wrestling business, just you will learn more about sort of how to deal with people, how to deal with sort of unusual people, how to deal with performers, how to deal with venues. It's a fantastic education that you kind of carry with you your whole life. So it doesn't surprise me that Dan would do something else incredibly successfully as
well.
Yeah,
so I'll put in one more plug for that. If you happen to be in the Birmingham area in October, go to Sloss Fright Furnace if you like haunted houses, because these are it is a very cool setting for a haunted house. You know, part of the history there is that it's haunted because a dude who was involved in the furnace got boiled in one of the vats over there at one point, and apparently his spirit is still running around in the buildings over there. So anyway, that's Sloss Fright Furnace. Check it out if you want to check out a good haunted house and when the season comes around. But Steve, let's go talk a little bit about the Rumble. You were there for the match. You want to give us your thoughts, your take on the way that went down?
You know, a couple people asked me, they're like, was that pop for AJ Styles as big as it sounded? Bigger. And it didn't shock me. It probably surprised WWE people, and I say good. That guy was mind-blowingly over, and it was a curtain sellout. I mean, everybody was watching on the monitor and wanted to see it, which was a really cool thing. So definitely that AJ Styles thing went over like a mug. And from what I'd heard, another sort of monitor sellout was the Ambrose match with Kevin Owens. So there was the one thing I can say is there was definitely a vibe of it was definitely go team. Whereas sometimes you'll go to WWE stuff. Now, granted, it's not things necessarily as big as the Rumble or WrestleMania, but and sometimes guys seem I don't want to say disinterested, but you know everybody's got their own stuff to do. But for the Rumble, it definitely seemed like there was kind of an energy backstage. People were really you know wanting to watch each other's stuff and you know oohing and aahing at the monitor. Which was really kind of nice to see, actually, that the WWE guys were into their stuff. Because you always get the impression that, you know, NXT right now, that's like go team, go team, go. And you'd hate to think that in the WWE it was not that vibe, but definitely for the Rumble it was that kind of vibe, at least from what I saw backstage. People were really excited to be in the show. That crowd, which is Orlando, just was incredibly into things. And boy, the difference that a crowd makes when they're into stuff. I mean, you know, there's you know, Ring of Honor lives and dies by that. And at WWE, I mean, I think we saw, you know, the crowd in Miami was a good crowd for Raw, but, you know, the Flo Rida thing killed them dead. Whenever you're losing a rap battle to Bo Dallas, by the way, you probably suck. But just pro tip. But you know, I that hurt the crowd for the women's match and another very good match, and it took The Rock coming out to kind of get them going again. But the Rumble was, I mean, it was full steam ahead. Did you watch the Rumble, Larry?
No, I did not. I did not have the network, and I did not see it. I did catch the clip of AJ's entrance, which I absolutely loved, of course. I mean, for me personally, I started writing about AJ in 1999 when he was a rookie in Cornelia. And was blown away by his athletic ability and, you know, the stuff he was inventing. Jeff T. Bailey has mentioned this, I think, on this show, has discussed his matches with Jason Cross where they were doing the mirror image stuff.
Yeah.
If you can find those on YouTube or something, check it out. I mean, they were doing some amazing stuff in those matches. But what I remember about AJ is I'd be writing these reports and sending them out to the internet, and I'd send them to Dave Meltzer, and he'd never print anything. Or mention anything about AJ Styles. It was years. It wasn't until he got to Ring of Honor that he ever, you know, really got much of a mention. He just like NWA Wildside just wasn't on the radar, unfortunately, at that point. I mean, it was down here, but it wasn't on the national level.
Right.
But, going back to Raw, what did you think of AJ and Jericho?
You know, it's interesting because like AJ, he had that great debut. And looked really good in the Rumble. Russo had said something like, well, if they're going to introduce AJ Styles in the Rumble, then he needs to win it or it's a complete waste. And Russo, shockingly not wrong. I will say that AJ Styles' music absolutely blows. It's fucking terrible.
Yes.
And they don't give him pyro, and they took away the hoodie thing, so he can't do the flip. Like, he looks downright ordinary, which is a testament to how over that guy is and how the WWE is now having to acknowledge that wrestling exists elsewhere. You know, they'll mention everything about AJ except for TNA. But it just goes to show, I mean, I'm sure there were guys who were like, they're not going to react to this guy. And then, you know, it was probably, well, they're reacting to him in the Rumble because this is Orlando where TNA did the tapings. But Miami, huge react. I'll say this, you know, I know people are going crazy for the AJ Styles Jericho match. I'm going crazy for the very fact that that match happened and that it was well received as it was, because I honestly thought Jericho was calling out too much stuff. Like, Jericho's mouth never stopped moving that whole match. I don't think he trusted AJ Styles to do that match. I think he was like, I'm the older guy, I've been in the WWE longer, I'm going to call out every blessed thing. And he looked half a step slow. Like, AJ Styles is so, I mean, I know there were concerns about, like, oh, is he going to be recovered from injury? Is he going to, like, you know, he's already kind of like, he's not an, I thought Jericho calling him kid again and again and again was absolutely hysterical. Like a guy who's been in wrestling for 18 years, who's got children and he's kid. But I thought AJ looked young. I mean, you know, the thing they did with his hair, he looked young in his prime. He looked fit, and Jericho looked like he was like stumbling to keep up with him. And I mean, that I've seen him do that like springboard forearm thing for years.
Yeah.
It has never looked better. That thing is a move that I generally don't react. I mean, to me, it sort of garners the same reaction as like Kane's top rope clothesline, but not anymore. Holy crap. Everything he does looks great. And I think it's very smart that they're not letting him do the Styles Clash, that they keep countering it. They keep stopping it. Cause the first time he puts that on somebody, it's going to get, I mean, they're allowing AJ Styles to be introduced to the audience, that the part of that audience that may not know him. And
right,
they're putting
right.
him over, you know, as the, this is the, they're the WWE. So they always say, well, he's in the big leagues now. Like JBL, the worst commentator right now to me out of anybody, is just saying, well, you know, he's, but it's like, but it's not, you know, it's not having the effect of, oh, this guy sucks. It really does come across of WWE's lucky to have this guy. And you know what? The WWE's lucky to have that guy. That's my impression of him against Jericho. That's my impression of him against the Rumble. It's tantalizing to think about the matchups that he can have.
And
kudos to them for not putting him in NXT. Kudos to them for giving him a real contract. I'm sure Bill Barons agrees. Kudos to them for bringing him in as AJ Styles and letting him do his thing and giving him a chance to get on the mic and all this other stuff. They're not doing this, you know, freaking thing, this self-fulfilling prophecy stuff where it's like, oh, guys from the outside can't get over. They're resisting the urge to do that right now, and it's so welcome. And I mean, the cynic in me goes, they're going to fuck it up, and in 6 months, AJ Styles is going to be wrestling Dolph Ziggler in a meaningless match. But there's a part of me that thinks, you know what, maybe they won't do that, because right now they're a little bit desperate, and I think that that could work to AJ Styles' benefit.
Yeah, I mean, timing is everything, and the timing couldn't be better for him not to be just lost in the shuffle with all the depleted roster situation that they have right now. One other thing, what did you think about the backstage interview segment with AJ and Jericho?
That's what I mean. Like, they gave AJ a chance to talk. They have, I mean, it can't be understated. I think Renee Young is phenomenal. The person I was talking to this morning said, you know, she could get a gig at ESPN if she ever left the WWE.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see that it's kind of all hands on deck for AJ to look good. You know, throwing him on the microphone is the right move. They haven't really decided on what's his personality, what's he going to be, but at least, I mean, WWE fans aren't stupid in the sense of, if they just threw AJ in a match without having him talk, I think there would have already been the impression of, oh, this guy doesn't matter. But now it's like, okay, this guy's talking on the microphone. This guy's in here with Jericho. He got the pin over Jericho. Did I think it was like the greatest talking segment? No. I mean, it's not Kevin Owens' first promo, certainly, in WWE. But I'm glad they're going to let him talk. I think, you know, it's just one of those where they just want to know that he can be solid in certain areas, and then his ring work is exceptional. And his, obviously, the crowd sort of reaction to him, he's got that it factor, man. I think that's the thing that was clearly established at the Rumble and Raw. He's got that it factor. So we're going to make, okay, he's solid enough on a promo. He didn't botch it. And so that's good. Now we'll give him some more to do as far as the mic goes. But I don't think there's any doubt that you could throw that guy in the ring with anybody, and it would be just perfectly fine in the WWE.
And I know there's time for this, and that we'll see how, you know, he's so much better on the mic than he was, let's say a decade ago, but he's just gotten steadily better on the mic. The only thing I didn't like, maybe this is just nitpicking, but in that promo segment that Jericho had the last word and AJ was just sort of standing there, I guess the idea was that, well, he was going to show him in the ring.
And the irony that people were like, oh, AJ is the new Jericho. And I thought to myself, yeah, and Jericho's the new old bitter guy in WWE. I'm just like, he's got to call everything out, even though AJ knows what he's doing. He's got to, like, get the last word in, much like Jericho's debut against The Rock, where, you know, on the microphone, where they just let Rock rip him in half.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that sucked. I mean, they gave him this superstar entrance, you know, the best thing he's ever gotten. And then he goes toe-to-toe with The Rock, and they let The Rock get the last word. But at least, you know, Jericho, you know, got to, he gave it up to AJ and got pinned. Though I thought even that pinning sequence sort of showed that Jericho was one step behind. You know, he had the pin on AJ, and then AJ reversed it, and it was a little clunky and a little weird. And I don't put that on AJ. I think that's Jericho. I mean, my wife, the cruelest person ever, just walked by and said, man, Jericho looks kind of older and fatter. And I go, he's 45. You know, like,
yeah,
he's older. I mean, he's calling AJ Styles kid. And so say no more.
Calling a 38-year-old a kid, yeah, okay.
38-year-old who's got more kids than he does.
Speaking of AJ's and contract, did you see that item, that press release from TNA about their negotiations with Styles and the other Bullet Club members?
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that? I definitely read the item, but can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, what they're saying is that AJ Gallows and Machine Gun had entered into talks with TNA prior to any signing with WWE, and the talks were ongoing, and that included a meeting at Dixie Carter's house, where a handshake and a written deal was signed by all. And I know that to be true, but evidently the way they refer to it in the press release is that the over the Christmas holiday and after the lawyers finalized the long form agreement, all communication with TNA stopped. So in essence, there never was a contract. Whatever this was that they signed was not a contract. It was something in writing, but it wasn't a contract that obligated the parties in a contractual manner. So TNA goes on to say that they mentioned that the plane tickets and creative and merchandise had already been developed. And then basically these guys pulled out. Well, like, how many times is TNA going to make the same mistake? How could you do those things without having an actual contract? And if you really did those things without a contract, why the hell would you put out a press release revealing that?
Yeah, my two thoughts on that. One, it was a similar thing with Bubba Ray / Bully Ray. Right. They brought him in to be like their commissioner or whatever. And literally he like did the one promo and then ran out the door and showed up at WWE, which made me think like, God damn, I mean, the fact that they continue to make that mistake. And two, I call bullshit. TNA had products ready to go. Get the fuck. They don't even have a merchandise table at their freaking shows in Orlando. Like they probably forget to pay the power bill. I'm supposed to believe that they've got their like merchandising arm going and all the rest of that stuff. Hell no, they don't. And I mean, I understand this is like part of Dixie Carter's new like offensive, where it's just like, yeah, the WWE's taking our guys, and like, I guess we matter now, and all this kind of stuff. And instead, again, it's just distracting from them talking about who they need to talk about, which is themselves. The ratings for that show on Pop have been going up steadily.
Yeah.
They should be very proud of that and trumpeting that. But again, they're allowing the conversation to swing towards the WWE again in an attempt. Like, I always get the feeling that Dixie Carter thinks she's running for office, not running a company. Where it's all about, I want people to perceive TNA a certain way. I want people to perceive me a certain way. None of that translates to eyeballs looking at your show or butts in a seat. And I think TNA, it's been said for a long time, but it bears repeating, they need to get their own shit in order before they're worried about. And I mean, let's be real. If James Storm signed for the money that he supposedly did, $250,000 a year, what the hell, like, how can TNA pay for any of this? I don't believe for a second they could have paid for AJ. And AJ, you know, would have held them to the fire financially because of how he felt he was treated when he left that company. There's
right.
no way he would have gone to them for anything less than, I mean, if James Storm got 250, you better believe AJ Styles would ask for at least double, triple, quadruple, right? And they're not in a position to pay. This is Heyman offering Sabu and Sandman a contract for $1 million a year. Okay. sure. That'll get paid off. Come on.
I mean, rumor has it they're already having trouble having trouble meeting payments that are due. So not that that's any shock to anybody, but here we go again.
And the Wolves, I mean, you know, the Wolves, Davey put out the thing going like, oh, we can take bookings on the independent scene until May 1st. It's pretty clear what's going to happen there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they had signed a deal with TNA that was supposed to go a couple of years. Clearly, TNA had to negotiate their way out of it because the Wolves seem like a team that they definitely would want to keep. And
yeah.
I think they sense, you know, I think they think the ship is going down, or at the very least, at this stage in their career, if they're going to do WWE, they kind of had a start-stop like a year ago. I think that they think, all right, like, this is our time to go. Clearly, smaller guys are going to get a push. Clearly, what you've done in other promotions now matters. This is the time to go. So it's going to be a tough road to hoe for TNA. Strangely, Ring of Honor seems like they're holding in just fine. Can you say that Ring of Honor is number two right now?
Yes, I think. I think that's pretty clear that they're number two as far as I'm concerned. Who knows what will happen with TNA and of course Lucha Underground, that they just don't have the clearances to really
right
as good as get enough eyeballs on it with the platform they have now.
Did you hear the rumor that WWE tried to get all the Lucha guys en masse?
I did not hear
that. They tried
to
sign them en masse. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that says something about both Lucha Underground and the success it's had in its limited way. And the way that the WWE is just, I mean, they are swallowing up the world right now. Clearly they're, you know, when you're worried about getting Bullet Club guys, not that those guys aren't over, not that that isn't like the shirt, not that that isn't the new NWO, I get all that, but the fact that the WWE would notice and let AJ Styles and concede to all of those things, letting him keep his name and all the rest of it, the times they are changing, and the WWE, you know, they never have the gloves on when it comes to fighting this fight, and they certainly don't have it now. So we got to talk about Stomper.
Before we call it a night, let's touch on Mongolian Stomper, who passed away this last week at the age of 79. Of course, he was a Canadian guy. I mean, he was Canadian and got his start.
Got his start in Stampede. Was called just the Stomper. He was like a Calgary era like cowboy shit kicker, basically. But then where he had his greatest success, would you say? Obviously in Tennessee, Larry. What is your memories of the Stomper watching him?
two main ones. I first saw Stomper come into the Atlanta City Auditorium. This would have been around 1980. So he was still at that point, you know, a relatively young person. But, you know, when you think about it, even at that point, Stomper was in his 40s. The thing that amazed me was his energy level was off the charts. This guy was maniacal in the ring. He never stopped. In tremendous shape, and he just made an impression as a really sort of guy who could really go. But then my last memories of him was when he showed up in Smoky Mountain in his 50s, and the guy was a workout fiend. He could still go and still was in shape in his mid-50s, had tremendous cardio. So that's the thing that stood out to me about Stomper was the guy just would not quit. He had incredible energy in the ring.
You know, I think he might be a name that doesn't immediately resonate with wrestlers today, young wrestlers today. But again, like you said, he did a lot of his best stuff at an older age. And that puts him in some pretty great company. I mean, I'm thinking of guys like Freddie Blassie, who drew his biggest money in his late 40s, early 50s with Tolos. Or you look at a guy like Lou Fez, who had this goal of wrestling in seven different decades. When I looked up Stomper on Wikipedia, Larry, he wrestled for 50 years, 5-0, 50 years. And I mean, make no mistake about it. And Stomper, you know, some would say, oh, like, yeah, but you know, the style that he wrestled, dude, that guy fought wars. That guy bled buckets. That guy feuded with Billy Robinson. And I think if you're not familiar with Billy Robinson, that doesn't sound like a big deal. Man, I mean, Billy Robinson was the kind of the worker of his day. And the fact that the Stomper could be in the ring with that guy, that they could turn him face. Often he would show up someplace, be the frightening heel for a long time, and then they would flip him face at the end of his runs. And just to give him sort of like a fresh group of opponents and one of those, like, we hate him so much as a heel and we're so scared of him, now we're glad this guy is on our side kind of thing. And he carried that decades and decades, truly just like sort of a timeless performer. Plus, I mean, there's a whole generation of people who I guarantee you kick the crap out of people yelling Stomper. I mean, fantastic stuff.
Hello. I think we cut out there for a second.
Sorry. Yeah, I asked, what's one, like, distinct memory you have seeing him? I mean, you talked about Lana. What's, like, one angle or a promo or something that he used to do that you just kind of saw as, like, a signature Stomper thing?
You know, I really can't think of one because he wasn't – in Atlanta, he wasn't a fixture character. He had brief forays into the area, but he wasn't a guy who was a regular recurring character. I just, as I said, the thing I remember is, you know, his intensity, that even in an era where a lot of guys had tremendous intensity, he was as intense as anybody. So that's the thing about him.
Just another legend passes on. In 2016 already, I mean, as far as celebrities go, it seems like there's already been a bunch of big names that have passed on. And, 2015 was big. I mean, you lost Piper and you lost Dusty Rhodes. And, the older these guys get, but Stomper, I mean, he lived to a ripe old age, boy. That guy squeezed the marrow out of life for sure. So rest in peace, Mongolian Stomper. Larry, where are you going to be this weekend?
Not quite sure yet. I'm tempted to go to Global. There's also, of course, Beach State's running. Probably one of those two, either Global in Pell City or Peach State in in Carrollton is likely where I'm going to be. The following weekend is interesting as well. Empire has their Long Cold Winter quarterly big show up in Rossville, and we've got the rematch, Jimmy Ray versus Anthony Henry. Flatline's putting that show on. And I know you're going to be running. Platinum's going to be running that Saturday as well.
Oh, and I'm going to be there. I'm showing up. So I got called out. So I will definitely be there at PCW on that first show in February. I always seem to wrestle near my birthday, or I always seem to be at PCW near my birthday. And this year is no exception to that.
Well, happy birthday in advance. And
thank you.
Next week, of course, this is our off week next week. That'll be Three the Hard Way with Matt Hankins and Woody Hollander will be on next Tuesday, and then we'll be back 2 weeks from tonight.
Yep, Larry, and I thank everybody for listening, and we thank our guest, Mad Dog Dan Sawyer, for being here, being our guest and being a great guest this week. And we will see you in 2 weeks, but make sure you tune in next week for Big Wood and that son of a bitch, Matt Hankins, on Three the Hard Way. But we'll see you in 2 weeks on The Tipping Point.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.